Today, she conserved in other ways.
I did lots of sewing. We couldn't buy much in the way of clothing. And they used to have bundles from clothing companies, I guess. And you could buy these in big bundles for 25 cents, maybe a great big bundle. And I remember I used to make my daughter's clothes, many of them, from these scraps of material.
Martha Dart says despite having to cut corners, those in rural Illinois did not face as many problems as those in cities.
I can't remember the situations being as bad around here, that is, as noticeable as maybe you would in the cities where they had the bread lines. I can't remember that we ever had anything like that around here.
Tweed Mummert also remembers conserving. He says saving a penny here and there was crucial.
In order to save money, Mother would send me to the dairy in a gallon container to get milk, just like you dip ice cream. And you got fresh milk in a container, and you carried that, and you took that home with you. And that saved money rather than having the dairy deliver milk to your household. And a lot of people did that. That wanted to save money.
We've hooverized on butter, and for milk we've only water. And I haven't seen a steak in many a day. As for pies, cakes, and jellies, we substitute sow bellies, for which we work the county road each day. Oh, those beans, bacon, and gravy, they almost drive me crazy. I eat them till I see them in my dreams.
In my dreams.
When I wake up in the morning and another day is dawning, I know I'll have another mess of beans. If there ever comes a time when I have more than a dime, they will have to put me under lock and key. For they've had me broke so long, I can only sing this song of the workers and their misery. Oh, those beans, bacon, and gravy, they almost drive me crazy. I eat them till I see them in my dreams. In my dreams, when I wake up in the morning and another day is dawning, I know I'll have another mess of beans.
History professor Ginny Boynton says Illinois was a microcosm of the Great Depression. She says rural areas provided a taste of what life was like out west, and Chicago and Peoria showed signs of the urban depression. Boynton says, like out west, the main problem for rural Illinois farmers was overproduction. During World War I and through the 20s, American farmers produced food for the entire world. But when the 30s rolled around, the United States became increasingly isolationist. That meant food sales overseas were significantly cut back. But farmers were still growing a lot of food, and because of that, food flooded the American market, demand decreased, and with it, food prices. Boynton says farmers in the Midwest suffered as a result.
For those people, that's why you have milk strikes, for example, in Iowa, where farmers are pouring their milk out on the street to protest the low prices. You have people in this region undergoing massive foreclosure problems to the extent where they are actually engaging in various kinds of civil disobedience to try to prevent the farm foreclosures that are going on.
But Boynton says farmers' problems out west were worse because of the Dust Bowl. She says unfavorable weather made it so that over-harvested land became even more unproductive. Singer Woody Guthrie in 1935 highlighted the problems facing the Dust Bowl farmer.
I'm a Dust Bowl refugee, just a Dust Bowl refugee. From that Dust Bowl to the Peach Bowl, now that peach fuzz is killing me. Cross the mountains to the sea, come the wife and kids and me. It's a hard old dusty highway for a Dust Bowl refugee.
This is Illinois Edition.
Hard, it's always been that way, here today and on our way, down that mountain, across the desert, just a Dust Bowl refugee. We are ramblers, so they say, we are only here today, then we travel with the seasons. We're the Dust Bowl refugees. From the Southland and the Droughtland come the wife and kids and me. And this old world is a hard world for a Dust Bowl refugee. Yes, we ramble and we roam, and the highway, that's our home. It's a never-ending highway for a Dust Bowl refugee.
Throughout the 1930s, Americans suffered economically more than any other time in U.S. history. Jenny Boynton says there was no part of the country that went untouched. There was one part of the country, though, where people were hurt more than just financially. In the South, some lost their lives. Abel Meerpol was a Jewish school teacher from New York City. After seeing a photo of African Americans being lynched, he wrote the lyrics to Strange Fruit. Billie Holiday first recorded the song in 1939.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree.
There was a spike in lynching during the 1930s as people look for scapegoats to blame for the difficult times they're facing. The vulnerable people in society, which in the South certainly included African Americans, were subject to increased harassment, being thrown off their land, losing their jobs, and getting lynched.
Pastoral scene of the gallant South, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a
Boynton says the country was ready for change. President Herbert Hoover was extremely unpopular. Hoover became synonymous for suffering. People Hooverized on butter, some used newspapers as Hoover blankets while living in their Hoovervilles. Boynton says Hoover deserves some of the blame, but not all of it.
Part of the difficulty for us today is remembering that the presidency was not then what it is now. The president did not have the same kind of influence, I guess you could say, in society.
Boynton says Hoover was previously successful. He had organized relief for starving Europeans during World War I, and he was Secretary of Commerce throughout the 20s. Boynton says Hoover's reaction to economic problems was not unusual at the time.
He comes from a tradition that believes in individual initiative and volunteerism as opposed to government action. And so he's not willing to use the resources of the federal government to provide direct assistance to the population. He doesn't even really like using it to help out cities and states. We need to remember the country had basically every 20 years or so gone through a serious contraction all through the 19th century. In the 1850s and the 1870s, the 1890s, the Depression of the 1890s was still the second worst we've ever had in this country. So when the Depression of the 1930s began, and the only reason we didn't have one in the 1910s was because of World War I, when the 1930s Depression gets started, at first it's like, okay, here's another contraction. You know, it's not a big deal. It was initially not as bad as the one in the 1890s or the post-World War I unemployment. And so there is a reluctance initially for people to accept the fact that this is an animal of a different stripe.
In 1932, the country was swept up in a presidential race. Franklin Delano Roosevelt handedly beat Hoover in a landslide victory. Happy Days Are Here Again, a song that debuted on Black Thursday in 1929, became FDR's campaign anthem. In 1933, FDR delivered one of the most famous inaugural speeches.
This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Ninety-two-year-old Chester Baher remembers when Roosevelt became president.
He was a big person at that time to bring us reform. One of the things that he took over was to get people to work, to have income, to have spending. He said we had to get the money in the hands of the masses to spend to create the prosperity, and that was his theory.
To get people to work, Roosevelt began New Deal programs. Some of the programs included the Works Progress Administration, National Youth Administration, and the Civilian Conservation Corps. Baher joined the CCC when he was 17.
We got on a train and took out, we went way out to Oregon. We were doing, working on the foresters for roads, fire breaks, and be called out on. And when the fires would break out, we'd be called into to help with the firefighting.
The CCC recruited a quarter of a million unemployed men. It put them to work in the country's national forests and parks. Baher says it was hard work, but he says his time with the Corps was also fun.
Well, in the CCC camps now, we would, we had little ball games and stuff. Usually something going around in the evening. So, hey, but then on the weekends, like Saturday morning, we would take off. And there in Oregon, we'd go into Klamath Falls. We could stay over the weekend. We could go to movie picture shows. There'd be dances. There's one very outstanding movie. That was Ginger Rogers. Oh, everybody just raved about Ginger Rogers.
Our stuff can't top this.
I guess Rogers gotten us in bad again.
It's going to be a long walk back home from here.
Just how much does it cost to get home from here?
Home, nothing. I'd like to try this thing just once. Come on, honey.
We'll show them a thing or three.
Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire danced the carioca in the 1933 film Flying Down to Rio. As a member of the CCC, Baher spent most of his time in Oregon. On the state's northern border with Washington, FDR's New Deal administration built dams and irrigation canals along the Columbia River. Woody Guthrie wrote and performed 29 Columbia River ballads.
Green Douglas firs where the water cut through. Down her wild mountains and canyons she flew. Canadian Northwest to the ocean so blue. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Tom Jefferson's vision would not let him rest. An empire he saw in the Pacific Northwest, St. Louis and Clark, and they did the rest. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on.
He has a series of verses in there in which it's kind of nice because he lays out sort of the history of the region. He talks about Lewis and Clark getting over to the Pacific Ocean, and he lays out the geography of the region, how the Columbia River comes down out of Canada and flows to the Pacific Ocean, and talks about the role that the dams are going to play in power generation for that region and how that's going to bring new job opportunities to people, that it is a huge engineering feat. It was, at the time that the Columbia River Dam was built, it was the largest slab of concrete in the world. It's since been surpassed, but it was a huge engineering feat to get done. That it was going to bring irrigation to farmers in the region by sort of taming the river, but that it wouldn't interfere with shipping. So he talks about how the ships are still going to be, you know, in locks there. They're going to be able to continue to use the river for shipping, even though there's these dams now being built on it. And it was it's a very rollicking sort of tune, I guess. And so it's easy to listen to and sing along with.
Thing ever built by a man to run the great factories and water the land. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning.
Boynton says the New Deal was working. She says it helped bring the country out of its worst economic depression. Back in Illinois and throughout the country, Americans heard President Roosevelt tell them that everything was going to be okay. Like in this fireside chat heard over the radio in 1933.
After all, there is an element in the readjustment of our financial system more important than currency, more important than gold, and that is the confidence of the people themselves.
Boynton says the Great Depression did not end until 1941. She says when Pearl Harbor was bombed, unemployment was still up around 15%. She says it was only when the U.S. began massive spending during World War II did the U.S. come out of its depression. Throughout the 1930s, people suffered in various ways. Farmers out west endured the Dust Bowl, hobos hopped trains and begged for food, and there were differences in the way people in cities and rural areas dealt with their troubles. But in Illinois, it was a bit of everything. Chester Baher says the great